Thank you, everybody. Good to be here, brother. I want you to have a rest. Go and sit down and take in what we've got to hear, because I've got a bit of audio. So I want you to appreciate and just to be able to relax. And I'm going to ask you to do something special. We're going to get a bit cozy tonight, and I wouldn't mind if you could all move, because I want you to be able to see that screen. Because I want to... Muldoon went to Orewa Rotary Club in the end of January, and he used to give his State of the Nation address, didn't he? And the Greens have got onto this, and apparently on Sunday at Waiheke Island, after they've smoked some dope, they're going to give the State of the Planet address. So we're going to do the State of the Nation address as well. And I want to give you some home truths, and I apologise that some of this stuff may be... you may find it offensive. Not offensive because I'm trying to offend you, but simply because we wake up to actually where we're at in our nation. So... let me, firstly, I think my wife would get on very well with your wife, Trevor. If she shops every day. My wife shops every day. Retail therapy, they call it, isn't it? Anyway, Family First has been around for about 18 months, and it seemed like God was calling Family First to speak up about some of the issues. And I guess the rapidness of the response, the number of supporters that have come on so quickly and the amount of coverage that we've got suggested that there was a gap in the market which we'd identified. So I'd like to show you firstly, actually, are we able to kill just those lights just to give a bit better because you've got a bit of sun or just if you're able to? You probably can see it okay. See, the good thing about when you have PowerPoint is that people don't look at me and so, you know, the focus is on there. Somebody said I've got the perfect face for radio, which is why I stuck to radio. So let me show you the kind of promo video that we put together when we first launched Family First 18 months ago. But we basically put across a couple of images there, didn't we? The first was teenage pregnancy rates. I'll come back to that in terms of our rate, but teenage abortions. Politicians passed a law or reinforced a law that says that a teenager can be sneaked off to have an abortion without the parents even knowing about it. And yet if that same child wants to go on a trip to the zoo, they've got to get parental permission. We've got domestic violence. There is a problem with drug and alcohol abuse and the stresses of family breakdown. That's actually my daughter in the photo, and she doesn't live in a home of domestic violence. I'd just like to clarify that. We've got teenage issues and drug and alcohol abuse. And we've got prostitution. In fact, in our local backyard, Manurewa, we've got kids as young as 10 and 11 prostituting themselves. We've had mothers prostituting their daughters just for money. We've got a law that says that right next to your house, a brothel could be set up with four sex workers and could operate as long as they live on site. Hey, great condition, isn't it? Knocking on your door. Sorry, just looking for the local brothel. Last place I'd want my daughter to be answering the phone. And so what we said was, it's their voice, it's our responsibility, we've got to start speaking up. It's the silence that is killing us. It's the silence that is the major problem. And I tell you what, there's been a number of issues that we've been able to speak up about on. And I guess probably a couple of the biggies that sort of got us into the news early on was, well, I guess was one was, I don't know if any of you had pizza tonight, but a pizza company decided to get out of the kitchen and into the bedroom.
Jackie Joseph's kids often race to empty the mailbox, but yesterday 9-year-old Cameron got a more continental type of letter, a condom advertising pizza, and wrapped in instructions on how to use the contraception.
It was Halloween time, kids think there's special treats in the letterbox, which is other issues, and the whole packaging was it wasn't sealed, you could open up, and quite explicit sexual material in there, which he's not ready for, and he's a really good reader.
Concerns that complaints will simply raise hell's profile hasn't deterred Christian groups.
I think the reaction to this will actually have a negative effect from the feedback we're getting. A lot of people are making complaints to the Advertising Standards Authority and are boycotting Hell's Pizza, and we encourage that.
And of course there's a whole lot of other advertising standards. In fact, just today we've been in the news talking about this JJ's, which is a kids' clothing range, selling Little Losers T-shirts. I don't know if you've heard of them. And they're selling shirts targeted to 10 to 17-year-olds with things like Mr. Pimp, Mr. Well Hung, Miss Floozy, Miss B-I-T-C-H, Mr. A-S-S-H-O-L-E. Yeah. And, you know, we're saying, hey, we've got to raise a standard. We've got to start talking about the sexualisation of kids. Interesting in that story, and we get it all the time. Don't talk about it. because you give them free advertising. Don't talk about it, and it'll just go away. Yeah, right. Don't talk about Californication, because nobody will watch it. Don't talk about South Park. Don't talk about JJ's shirts. Don't talk about Hell's Pizza. And you know what? It's the silence that is the problem. It's gonna stay there, and they're just going to continue to push the boundaries. We have to speak up, and I'll come back to that. We also got some coverage early on because of 24/7 childcare. There's a childcare joint, I don't know if you're not from Auckland, but childcare in Parnell where they're operating 24/7. You can check your kids in on a Friday night, pick them up on Monday morning. They'll even send them to school, and you can pick them up Monday afternoon. But I'll tell you what, it's an actual problem with extended childcare. The Prime Minister says that one of her greatest achievements for last year was 20 hours free childcare. But she ain't read the research. She hasn't read what effect it actually has on kids, on mothers, on families of extended periods of childcare. The research and the experts are saying that we have too much childcare, it's too early in their life, and they're in it for too long during the day. And you know what the saddest part is? Churches are setting up childcare. And they ain't read the research either. And that's a major problem. Of course, probably in terms of profile, I really should send a bouquet of flowers to Sue Bradford because she helped raise our profile. Because we spoke up against the anti-smacking bill.
Prime News, first at 5:30 with Eric Young.
Kia ora, good evening. On the eve of the first controversial vote of the new parliamentary year, a family group is urging MPs to vote against Sue Bradford's so-called anti-smacking bill. Family First says it's concerned the law would make good parents into criminals. But Ms Bradford has dismissed their claims and says the group is being alarmist.
1,200 signatures urging the government to vote down the anti-smacking bill. Family First insists smacking is a viable parenting tool.
And I've got proof. I've got three boys, my oldest is five, and he's learning.
And so the politicians didn't listen, and you've actually got a sheet on your chair. Make them listen. Make it a referendum item. Make them listen about the smacking law and tell them to target the real causes of child abuse. 300,000 signatures to get it on the election ballot. We've got 265. 35,000 to go. It is that simple. And if there was one thing you did as a result of tonight, it's go away and get 10 signatures on each of those petitions so that we force a referendum on this, so that the politicians hear the voice of New Zealanders on this issue. You see, we tried to give them our voice. We tried to say, we went to Parliament, we tried to say, look, you're targeting the wrong end of the scale. You're targeting the good parents and you're actually not dealing with child abuse. And it's a little bit like this cartoon that Tremaine did, you know, where the little kid's beating the hang out of the cat, set him on fire, just about killed him, and mum has to say, I won't tell you again, leave pussy alone or I'll smack you lightly with an open hand. I mean, we've sort of got everything out of kilter, haven't we? It's just that ludicrous and that farcical. But at the end of the day, the problem that we've avoided in all this, and look, there was an amazing statement that Sue Bradford made at the end of last year. She said, on national radio, and in a radio interview, she said, the rate of child, this was after the latest case of child abuse, and look, we've had 6 child abuse deaths since that law was passed. I mean, when they were arguing about that law in Parliament, Nia Glassie was being hung from a clothesline. The rate continues. It's done nothing for child abuse. And Sue Bradford said, and I quote, and I better get this right, since I said I quote, the rate of child abuse and child violence continues. Sadly, my bill was never intended to deal with child abuse. Now, you've got to ask yourself, what did we waste 2 years arguing about when we wanted to deal with child abuse? We all want to deal with child abuse. We have got a problem. Look at the OECD chart, okay? And this was published last year, and this was kind of like everyone said, oh, well, this is perfect proof that we have to ban smacking because this is going to deal with child abuse. The fascinating thing, and of the top 10 countries here, we've got up the top Sweden, United Kingdom, Netherlands, Italy, Iceland, Spain, Switzerland, France. I'll show you where New Zealand is in a moment. Of the top 10 countries that are the safest in the OECD, 6 of them haven't even banned smacking. But they can't quite figure that out connection. Let me show you where New Zealand is. There we are, bottom, in the OECD. So we have got a problem. And that's what we tried to say. Sorry, did you have a question? OECD, these are non-OECD countries, and we have got really safe countries like Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, Russia. And surprisingly, down the very bottom is Israel. Okay, but in terms of the OECD countries, we are one of the worst, and I guess that's what they call developed, although it's funny that Israel isn't part of that. But hey, I'm not here to explain all that. There's something, you know, we have got a problem. There's no doubt about it. We have got a child abuse problem. We've got a culture where something's happening in the family, and we've tried to highlight what it is. And when Nia Glassy was hung from the washing line, and when she was killed tragically, we actually said, and Trevor touched on it earlier on, that we have looked for too long at the government to solve the problems. We have looked too long at SIFs to solve the problems. And we're actually saying the solution lies with us. We've got to be part of the solution. And that's what we said with the Nia Glassy case when we called on the nation to stop and take ownership of the problem.
Their faces are becoming familiar, and the reaction of horror is always the same. Now campaigners want everyday people to stand up and be counted.
And we're saying to New Zealanders, ask ourselves how we can be part of the solution.
Let's show the world that we do care, because we're an embarrassment throughout the world in terms of our child abuse statistics.
And amazing, throughout New Zealand, for 3 minutes at 12 minutes past 12 on that day, people did stop. People actually stop because they realise we have to be part of the solution. We have to own the problem and stop pointing the finger. And so we developed what we call a Stop the Abuse website, stoptheabuse.org.nz, which basically showed our five-point action plan. And it was basically to take it out of the hands of the government, for us to take responsibility for it, to start empowering the local groups that are working in the community, making a difference. And so we've tried to push. Now, I tell you what, when we came out and started saying, promoting this and saying we've got to stop the abuse, that really threw the critics. I mean, they had labelled us as people who were pro-smacking, so we were pro-bashing and thrashing and hitting kids and all that type of stuff. And then when we came out and actually said, hey, we've got to deal with the problem of child abuse, that really confused them, because the wisdom of understanding the difference that a smack is not child abuse and a child abuse is not smack. Parental correction is not a dysfunctional family and a dysfunctional parent. You know, when a father has to discipline a child who's riding down a major road in Christchurch because he's scared of him being killed, and he's got six cops surrounding him telling him off, you know you've got a problem. There's, you know, we're just not defending parents the way we should. And so what's happened is, of course, we're targeting the good families. The good families are being targeted, and there's been profile of that.
Police have warned a Wellington woman she risks arrest if she's again reported for smacking her child. Her case, which was reported to Child, Youth and Family, is believed to be the first since the controversial anti-smacking legislation came into effect. The woman, who has not been named, says she smacked the child lightly on the hand for refusing to get ready for school. The child later told a teacher. 2 months later, a neighbour also called police after the same mother smacked her child for misbehaving on a trampoline. Family First says the new law only creates insecurity for some families.
We're wasting police and child, youth and family resources on good families, and meanwhile, child abuse is continuing. The at-risk families are still at risk. Let's target those families.
Well, under the new laws, teachers are required to report all smacking incidents to SIFs.
And of course, they say that is the first case. It hasn't been the last, and we continue to try and profile cases where good families are being targeted. And to tell you the truth, it's not hard. This was our first one. You may have seen it as full-page ads in the newspapers. And we are currently working on our second one, which we hope to publish either this Sunday or next Sunday, finance is willing. And if you've got a spare $5,000 in your pocket, please see me straight after this. Once again, similar cases, five more cases. You know, a mum who's dealing with an autistic child is told by the specialist that the best thing to do when a child has a tantrum in the supermarket is bring it quickly under control. Confronted by police, telling her not to discipline that child. A grandmother who takes a two-year-old, stops the child from running out onto the road, is told by the police that that is illegal. The grandmother now takes the child in the pram to avoid getting caught. And this one, where a four-year-old goes to run across a busy road, and the mother freaks when two cops turn up to her front doorstep. I mean, what have we created? We've created a stupid law that is targeting good parents And what's happening with the child abuse? Has it done anything with the child abuse rate? Has it brought down the rate at all? No, it just continues. It's exactly what we said. It's targeting the wrong group. There's been other issues, and I don't want to go on because I want to just talk a little bit about our understanding of the concept. But there was one that I just want to show you just for a bit of a laugh. And look, about an hour ago, I was mowing the lawns and, you know, was shorts and singlet like you are in summer and sweating and grass, covered in grass, and definitely not looking like I do right now. Well, I hope you don't think so. And this was a little bit like this particular issue that I'm just going to show you. It was our first foray into Australian TV. It was Channel 9. And it was kind of their equivalent to the close-up program. And on that program, they were covering, there was a huge billboard this time last year at Auckland Airport. And it was Miss Australia, and she was advertising, actually we're going to have to watch it for me to figure out what she was advertising. It was a tourism, yeah, okay. But it was there were sexual innuendos in it, which you'll just see a little caption of it. Now, the funny thing is that we did this by satellite, so they came to where I was staying in Mount Maunganui. I had zinc on. I was having an afternoon, you know, nana nap. Had just come back from the beach type thing. And so suddenly I had to look good. So you can judge for yourself whether you think I look good. But this is just another example of how we've got to start speaking up about advertising standards. And I apologise that if some of the images you see on this particular clip you're offended by. In some ways, I hope you're offended by it, because we have to be offended by the things that offends God.
What's your reaction to these ads?
We've got nothing against Australians and nothing against Miss Universe, but the problem was that this ad was exposed to the general public. It was in a very public place, and once again, the ad was more targeted at a more mature audience. It had sexual connotations. And this was an ad that was going to be seen by families, by young children, by people who might be offended by it. And so we think in the interests of those people, it better not to be put up. Put it in a targeted place like a magazine.
So once again, and I don't know if you saw the wording, but she was basically chewing on the ear of a rhinoceros, and it said horny. It was advertising lingerie, I actually think. It was, just happened to be at the airport. And if you've ever driven to the airport, you know how big those billboards are. Okay, and once again, we're actually saying, no, we need standards. Now, the funny thing about the Californication program, and I had a couple of radio interviews, one was with a woman in Christchurch, ZB, and with Bill Ralston on Radio Live. Now, when you are interviewed by Bill Ralston, you're not really interviewed by him. He just rants and raves at you. But anyway, both of them said, who are you, Bob, to impose your standards on us? And to both of them, fortunately, I had a background in radio, and I said to them, listen, if I was to use the F word on your program right now, you would be reaching straight away for that dump button that you legally have to have in your radio studio, because you have a standard on radio. You can't say that word. Now, that's what they don't understand. They say, don't impose your standards on me, and yet they've got their own standards. We have standards. We all have standards. You know, the classic argument that, for example, the Prime Minister, whenever she talks about family first, she says extreme fundamentalists. Well, what is a fundamentalist? I mean, we've all got fundamentalists, whether you're from the left or the right. I mean, some of those greenies that have gone to stop that whaling, aren't they fundamentalists in what they believe? Good on them. You know, but we do it in this negative connotation. So let me come back. There's been other issues. There's been, you know, there was a claim that families who go on holiday with their families, that's truanting, and that those families should be prosecuted. We said get real. There was loan sharks. We've got a major problem in South Auckland with loan sharks who are just targeting the vulnerable families. And, of course, the electoral finance bill, which was designed to gag and to shut up groups that are dissenting. One of the key strategies that we use is our website, which we update on a regular basis, and we also send out a weekly email, which you can sign up for. It's free. We've got 3,500 on that. We want to increase the influence of that, because we believe it's grassroots people like you that are going to make the difference. It's not going to come from the top. It's going to come from us as we're motivated. So we encourage you to sign up for that. We've also done a forum on the family where we've got together like-minded groups, pro-family, pro-marriage, pro-moral values groups, pro-life groups, to strategize together, not to make one big conglomerate group, which just becomes a big glob, but to actually motivate each other to speak out in our areas of concern and in our local areas. Let me just, I'm sure you know all this, but let me just run it by you again. We have got a problem in New Zealand. According to the census, which we did, well, it's 2 years ago now, well, 1.5 years, There are over almost 200,000 one-parent families in New Zealand. 82% are headed by a mother. So there's 156,000 dads missing in action, either because they don't want to be on the scene, or the family court says they can't be on the scene, or they've done a runner to Australia because they don't want to pay the family support. And Statistics New Zealand says it's going to get worse. By the age of 20, a third of Pākehā children, almost half of Pacific Island children, and 57% of Māori children will have lived in homes without a parent, usually the father. Now, it's interesting, when you look at the child abuse statistics and you break them down, you'll see a consistency. Some people say, why are Māori so disproportionately represented in child abuse statistics? There's one answer. There's one answer. You know, family breakdown, family stress. Even SIFs acknowledge that a home where there is a non-biological male living with mum, where mum's got the live-in boyfriend, that child is 50 times more likely to be abused than a child living with their biological parents. But hey, have you heard the government promote marriage lately? Have you heard Cindy Kiro, the Children's Commissioner, promote marriage? Sue Bradford promote marriage? No. No, let's just criminalise parents who happen to use a smack. And you may say, hey, look, solo parenting, it's part of the way the world is going. Well, here's the proportion of child-rearing families that are sole parent. These are sole parent families. Up the top, what have we got? Spain, Portugal, Greece, Italy, Switzerland, Czech Republic, Poland, Iceland. Can you see New Zealand, guys? Got a problem, haven't we? The Families Commission published this. They showed the change in the marriage rate and the divorce rate in the last four and a half decades now. And you'll see that marriage is weakening. It's sort of leveled off a little bit now. And divorce. That doesn't mean that for every marriage there's a divorce. It's about 2 to 1. For every 2 marriages, there's 1 divorce. But if you look down the very bottom, you will see that in 1971, when it first started, for every 1 divorce, there was 8 marriages. So for 8 marriages, there was 1 divorce. Now it's for 2 marriages, 1 divorce. Now, the fascinating bit is that this was published by the Families Commission. Have you heard the Families Commission promote marriage? In fact, I looked at their statement of intent. There's a program called Adobe Acrobat, I think it's called, and you can do a word search, marriage. I did it. Ding! Couldn't find any. Couldn't find the word. Here's the Families Commission, promoting families. You know the safest place for a woman to be from domestic violence? It's in a married relationship. Do you know the safest place for a child to live? It's with a married parents, biological parents. Sure, there are variations. Sure, there are solo parents doing a fantastic job. Sure, there are step families. But we've got to start talking the truth and actually promote good policy and give support to families where they don't have that ideal, that natural family ideal. We've got to have that backup support. What are we doing? We've got young teenage pregnant mums in Rotorua and they can't even find a midwife to support them. We've got mothers being kicked out of hospital after 24 hours in hospital because we just can't afford to keep them there. You know, we just are not looking after those early years, are we? We have not got Plunkett visiting families and seeing if mothers are distressed. Auckland University says that the postnatal depression, we've got a terrible rate of postnatal depression. Can you see us actually doing something proactive about that? Nope, kicking them out of hospital earlier. You know, some of the basics, the stress in families. I don't condone what goes on in families, some of the violence, but to tell you the truth, I sometimes understand it. Because, hey, I've got 3 kids. My wife's delivered 3 kids. She's gone through, you know, those early years, that lack of sleep. It's tough times, isn't it? You know, as parents, it's tough times and we need support, and yet we don't seem to be doing some of the basics. Does it matter that dad's not on the scene? You bet. Boys without fathers, twice as likely to drop out of school, go to jail. An evangelist, Bill Glass, who worked in death row, which are prisoners sentenced to death, heinous crimes, he found 95% on death row hated their fathers, not their mothers. And it wasn't just didn't know their fathers, hated their fathers. There's something about the father relationship that has an effect on the behaviour and attitudes of kids. Same with fatherless homes. 2/3 of youth suicides, 90% of homeless runaways, 85% of behavioural disorders, teen drug abusers, youth in prison, etc., etc. If Andrew Beecroft, the chief youth court judge stood up here now and you asked him, what is the typical client that you see in front of you, what are the worst juvenile offenders, he will tell you that it's a child with a solo mum who's done their darndest and is sitting in the back crying their eyes out because they're saying, I just can't control him anymore. And that boy doesn't know his dad. And I guess to men, we've got to step up to the mark. We've got to be fathers. And fatherlessness in New Zealand is a major issue. It's actually some of the basic things that if we do it right, we actually get the results. Research showed that teens who ate dinner with their parents five times or more per week, less likely to be on drugs, depressed or in trouble with the law, more likely to be doing well in a school surrounded by a supportive circle of friends. And that's just having a meal together five times or more. We're not talking a meal with John Campbell or, with Mike McRoberts. We're talking about interacting. It's just a basic. In fact, some research just came out last week that said that girls are far less likely to have eating disorders if they eat as a family on a regular basis. What they found was three times or less was a poorly adjusted teen. And that's consistent research about the simplicity of families. Now, the interesting thing is, and I don't know why, but the OECD actually did a study of teenagers in their latest report on the welfare of families, which came out last year. And they actually asked the question, how many times, where you have the main meal of the day with your parents several times per week, okay? And they love having meals together in Italy, Iceland, France, Netherlands, and Switzerland. Can you see New Zealand, folks? Let me highlight it. What's going on? What's happening in schools? It's not too good either. This is a percentage increase in just 5 years. We've had a 55% increase in drugs, 37% increase in assaults on pupils, 38% increase in assaults on staff. We've had a 100% increase in weapons and 27% increase in sexual misconduct. In fact, a lot of the sexual misconduct has actually been greater in primary schools, the sexual acting out. And that's the exact reason why we've spoken up about those T-shirts, because they sexualise kids. They make people look at kids as sexual objects, and that's a no-no area. But it also affects the psyche of kids as well. They think of themselves as sexual creatures, and then they start getting obsessed about body image and sexual things like that. We've got to start speaking up about some of that stuff. Just a little humour here. So what did the kids learn on their first day at school? And he's got a sign that says, on strike for more snacks, and she's got a sign that says, we won't clean our rooms. Which is probably a little bit true about what they could be taught at school. Children's rights. Let me show you a clip from a 60 Minutes program that we were featured on. This was early in our life as well. And I just want to warn you, there are no kids here, because there is this is slightly offensive. And I simply, I'll just play a little bit of this, and I do apologise that you may find this offensive, but I'll explain why I'm showing it in a second.
I'm going to work with this completely unrealistic looking penis, but this is a good demonstrator of how to use a condom, okay? All right.
At Nelson Boys College, it's lesson time like never before. Classes like these are happening in schools up and down the country. Sex education is now a compulsory part of the curriculum.
Then there is sexual intercourse, and then there is orgasm, and then there is very good. This is a terrific class. Hardly any classes get that right. You see how that condom has a little rim at the end? Somebody has to be responsible for holding on to the rim of that condom as it is withdrawn, and then there is a loss of erection, and then relaxation.
All right, I won't show you any more of that because I won't offend you anymore. Being taught in your local school, being taught to your kids, your grandkids. That's the sex education curriculum. You might learn something new from this this little clip.
But Bob McCroskey, whose research material available to schools, isn't happy.
A lot of the stuff that is in these pamphlets, even married couples, even grown adults, would be embarrassed by.
He cites this booklet as a particular concern. Sisters is produced by the YWCA.
It says if you identify with uncontrollable blushing, hysterical giggling, wild hormonal outbursts only around women, then it could mean that you're a lesbian or having lesbian feelings. If you do choose to get physical, lesbian sex is as interesting and varied as heterosexual sex. Touching, kissing, stroking, feeling, rubbing. If you are having oral sex, you need to use dental dams. Do you know what those are?
Well, not until I read this, no.
I think probably many adults don't.
At a local school. And the problem is that we continue to peddle that to kids, and yet if you read the surveys, you actually find that in a typical classroom, more than half the class are not actually sexually active. What are we saying to them? Are we encouraging them? Are we using the abstinence word? No, it's too value-based. Ian Grant, Parents Inc., runs a values-based sex education course, can't get a dollar. Do you know how much family planning get? $6 or $7 million a year. Because it's not value-based. And so what we have is we have stuff like the Hubba Bubba campaign. 2 years ago, this came out. Hubba Hubba, use a rubber. Basically, the message to teenagers, and I'll get off this topic in a moment if you're feeling a bit uncomfortable here. They said in their advertising, Hubba Hubba, use a rubber during summer, you'll be safe. Condoms offer the best protection. Okay? Now, family planning was on an interview. And believe it or not, it was on BFM. Now, BFM is the Auckland University radio station. And was interviewed, and this interviewer started saying, started asking about actually what is the success rate of condoms? Is it correct to say that it is safe? And the family planning lady, Dr. Christine Roach, was challenged on the success rate of condoms. And actually was challenged on the fact that the World Health Organization and other groups say that they can have as limited as 40% success rate. And this was the response.
We would think that it's better protection than that, but even 40% protection I would have thought is well worth using them. But if you're going to be having sexual intercourse or sexual relations, even you see skin-to-skin contact can transmit some of these.
We thought 40% was okay. Now look, folks, if I told you that leaving here tonight, there's an idiot driver going to come past and is going to take you out and is going to give you injuries, you'd do one of two things. You'd either use a different driveway or you'd stay and have a cup of tea, wouldn't you? And that's exactly the message we want to give kids. We want them to delay their journey. We want them to take a different option until they're ready to handle the consequences. We just think they deserve honesty. Kids deserve honesty, and they're not getting it from the current curriculum because there's an agenda. And the problem is that, according to the OECD report again, hey, let's have another look, eh? And you probably already know where to look on the chart. This is the teenage pregnancy rate. And up the top we've got Japan, because they're too busy working. Netherlands, Switzerland, Denmark, Italy, Spain, Sweden. Where are we, folks?
I know.
There we are. Okay. We just ain't getting it right, are we? Because we're not willing to use values-based kind of teaching in this area either. Once again, cartoon, kind of a statue. It's the nuclear family, you know, mother, kid, and social worker. And there's probably a lot of truth to that. Let me just warn you also about media bias, because unfortunately, I'm sure when you read something in the paper, you believe it. And if you watch it on TV and it's in the news, you think it must be true. And if you hear it on the radio, it's true. Nothing could be further from the truth. This is a billboard, and it was for Prime TV, and it was for a program called Weeds, which is about a solo mum who survives by selling marijuana. And this is three bags. You can see the size of them because you can see the give way sign and the cone down the bottom. So it's a massive billboard. It's got two bags of bread on the left, and in the right hand, it's got marijuana in the bag. And through the gap there, see that red door? That's a school door. That's a primary school. Okay? So we wrote to the, we sent out a media release and we said it's about time Prime showed some social responsibility. We're trying to tell our kids to be drug free and all you're doing is you're glorifying it right in front of them. Well, I sent off the email, the media release, and I got an email back. More comment on the weed billboards from Fundy Nutcases. Now, you know what had happened. If you've ever used email, there's a real danger that instead of pressing forward, you accidentally click reply. Now that I've told you, you'll be more aware of it because it means that people get what you meant to send on to other people. See, they wanted to send this on to the sub-reporters, but they accidentally sent it back to me. And about 1 minute later, I got another email. Sorry, Bob, that must have seemed rather rude. We do appreciate getting your emails, and I'm hoping we can run your comments about the billboard. Now, I emailed them back, and I said, well, you know, my wife thinks I'm a bit of a nutcase, and I'm not sure about the fundy, but I really just thought, look, it's not even worth worrying about. And they came back and they said, thanks, Bob, to be honest, I do disagree with your stances, but support your right for your views to be heard. I should have gone back to him, and I just couldn't be bothered. But I should have gone back and said, listen, mate, you're a reporter. You're there to report the facts. You're not there to interpret and tell us what your view is. But I tell you what, they're all doing it. And you just listen to the words that are used on the news now. You listen to the way they frame it and how they label people. Same thing happened on TV3. I sent off a media release about the drug Gardasil, which is a vaccine against the HPV virus. It sounds very good, but I tell you what, there's major concerns about its safety and also its moral thing of giving 11-year-olds a drug, which is basically to vaccinate them against sexual immorality. Anyway, I sent off quite a detailed sheet, and I get this email back. Same thing happened. I didn't put the words she put. I'm going to have to call all the same people again. Christians, no offence if you're Christian. Thought that was quite funny. This came back to me. Had pressed the reply button instead of forward again. Came back again. Hi again. So sorry about that email. Feel terrible. I've had a bad Gardasil. Morning regards. Now, you've got to understand that when you read the newspaper and when you watch the news and when you listen on the radio, just because it's being said doesn't mean that it's totally unbiased and is the facts. There is distortion in it. And in fact, the BBC, you know, the BBC, this is the news. They got together and they had a summit to figure out how biased they were. And they came back with a glowing F. F for biased. They said that they promoted, this is the BBC saying it about themselves, that they promote left-wing views, that they are anti-Christian, that they are disproportionately overrepresented by gays and ethnic minorities, they are guilty of political correctness, they have overt promotion of multiculturalism, they are anti-American, we knew that, and they would happily broadcast the image of the Bible being thrown away, but not the Quran. So please don't tell me that the media are unbiased. Please start engaging the mind when you tackle the media, when you watch the news, when you listen to the radio, when you read the newspaper. Engage the brain. We have to do that. Let me just briefly, this is a great book, The Marketing of Evil. If I encourage you to read any book, it's this one, The Marketing of Evil. But they quote this book. In the end of the 80s and the early 90s, the gay community wanted to make themselves acceptable. They wanted to normalise their behaviour, because at the time it wasn't. They wanted to normalise it. And so what they did was, what this book does, it actually gives the strategy that they used. And I want you to pay close attention to their strategy, because we need to learn from it. Because whether we like it or not, the gay community, I think, have been incredibly successful at normalising what they've done. Okay? And this is what they said. The separability and manipulability of the verbal label is the basis for all the abstract principles underlying our proposed campaign. Now, for those of you who speak English, let me interpret it. The separability and manipulability of the verbal. The manipulating of the verbal. And so what they said was, we can change what people actually think and feel by breaking their current negative associations with our cause and replacing them with positive associations. Okay? And so this is what they did, and this is what they continue to do. They didn't say that they were pro-homosexual. They took a nice word, gay, and said gay rights. Hard to argue against people having basic rights. And gay is not that offensive, is it? The pro-abortion group did the same as well, but they didn't say they were pro-abortion. They said they were pro-choice. Hard to argue against people just having the right to have a choice. When we talk about taking the unborn child and cloning them, they don't call it that, they call it this, therapeutic cloning. They don't talk about euthanasia, they call it death with dignity, even if the person dying doesn't have a choice. They don't call them state schools, controlled by the state, they call them public schools. Sounds very open-minded, doesn't it? And what about childcare? I tell you what, we've been through a whole raft of changes of terminology to make it more acceptable. In the 70s, they called it childminding. And then in the 80s, they thought, nah, let's call it childcare. That sounds a little bit nicer. And then in the 90s, they said, hey, let's bring an education early learning centre. That sounds even more motivation for children to be checked in. And then in the current, it's early childhood education. Because apparently mums can't do it anymore. Apparently we need paid professionals to look after your kids as preschoolers. Because the message to stay-home mums or stay-home dads is you're just not quite good at giving that early childhood education. And, of course, the classic one was in the smacking. See, if you gave your child some discipline, you were beating them and you were assaulting them, and the Prime Minister said that if you opposed the anti-smacking bill, you were people who wanted to thrash and beat your children. The use of the words is quite incredible, and yet we have to understand that you can change the way people approach. And I guess the problem with Christian groups is they come across as very negative. They're against stuff. And we need to actually start saying we are pro things. We are pro marriage. We are pro family. We are pro life. We are for things, rather than being seen as the party poopers who are always against something. And so we have to understand that. And so what they said was, and if you do marketing, you'll understand some of these terms, desensitization is a continuous flooding of gay-related advertising presented in the least offensive fashion possible. Talk about gayness until the issue becomes thoroughly tiresome. If you can get straights to just think that homosexuality is just another thing, meriting no more than a shrug of the shoulders, then your battle for legal and social rights is virtually won. I think they've done incredibly well. This is their strategy, and I think they carried it out, and they have been incredibly successful. And I think we have to understand that. As people passionate about family, we have to understand what some of the issues are and how we have to communicate it. And that's why when the smacking debate came up, we started challenging some of those basic statements that were being made about the fact that apparently child abuse wasn't illegal before they introduced the anti-smacking bill. Well, it was. Child abuse was illegal. You know, they said that you were assaulting your child. They said that all smacking is bad and that kids grow up dysfunctional if they've got a smack. And yet if you read the research, it doesn't say that at all. So, you know, it's getting some of that truth. So that was the first thing, desensitization. That was part of their strategy. The second part of their strategy was psychological terrorism meant to silence expression or even support for a dissenting opinion. So basically what they did was they said that if you disagree with us, we attack you with a label. Now, Family First has had that right from the start. Right wing, fundamentalist, extreme. And of course, there's all these terms. You probably know them. You get called homophobic. You're guilty of hate speech, hate crime. You're intolerant. You're a bigot. You're a white right wing fundamentalist. And you're a Nazi. Now, Nazi may seem a little extreme, right? But let me show you an example of how it was used.
In other news tonight, emotions ran high as a controversial tele-evangelist led thousands of followers to Parliament. Destiny Church pastor Brian Tumaki and his supporters marched in the Capitol to protest against government plans to give gay and de facto partners the same rights as married couples. And they were met by a small but vocal group supporting the new law.
Marching with a message.
Enough is enough!
More than 7,000 Christians taking to Wellington streets in protest at the civil unions bill. They're upset at the government's plans to allow gay and de facto couples to register their relationship, giving them the same legal rights as marriage.
It's not a right, it's a wrong when it comes to putting this alongside of what God requires of good relationships.
But that message and the style of the march upsetting some onlookers.
My grandmother was liberated, freed from a Gestapo prison, okay? And these people have no idea what they're playing with. They're playing with fire, they really are.
There we are. See the inherent message? The Nazi label. The interesting thing is that this was TV1. TV3 found the same guy with the same message on the same night. You'll actually see in the microphone there, there's Global, which is a radio network. So amongst 7,000 marchers and probably another 7,000 on their lunchtime break in Wellington, they all managed to find the one guy who wanted to use the Nazi label. Okay? It's part of the jamming. It's the putting labels on people to shut them up. Okay, and when the media came out, look, I don't want to debate here about whether that march was right, whether it came across right, but just you've got to understand the labels that are put on and how they're used. The New Zealand Press Association said March compared to the rise of Nazism. And the Christchurch Press says March arouses Nazi fears. All a similar theme, isn't it? Now, the problem is that the church has bought into this labelling. And we now have in the church the left and the right wing, apparently. Apparently, I say, because I think it's a load of bollocks. Left and right wing Christians. Apparently, if you're a left wing Christian, you are into the environment, poverty, housing, and you're anti-war. But if you're a right wing Christian, you're opposed to abortion, homosexual marriage, prostitution, and you're into the authority of Scripture. Now, I actually think Jesus was both. I think he was left and right. I think he was concerned about social issue justice, issues of welfare and poverty, but also I think he was concerned about personal holiness as well. So I think he was ambidextrous. And so every time someone tries and labels you or me, your left wing or right wing, rebuke it. Because what it's designed to do is shut you up. It's to say, I don't need to debate you because you're a left-wing greenie or you're a left-wing nutterer. I don't need to debate you because you're a right-wing fundamentalist. And all it's doing is it's a lazy way of debating. The sad part is that the church has bought into it and has created these groups like the Christian left. And, hey, we all know that a church divided cannot stand. And it's, I tell you what, it's amazing. It's like the church is shooting itself in the foot, dividing itself. I mean, for example, have you ever heard of the homosexual left or right? Have you ever heard of the pro-abortion left or right? Have you ever heard of the environmental left or right? Have you ever heard of the feminist left or right? But you've always heard of the Christian left and right, right-wing fundamentalists, left-wing liberals. We've got to get rid of the labels because it's actually part of the problem. So desensitization, jamming, and lastly, conversion. This was their last part of the strategy. Conversion of the average American's emotions, minds, and will through a planned psychological attack in the form of propaganda fed to the nation via the media. So I hope that if you've learnt anything out of here, is to start when you open the newspaper and watch the news and listen to the radio, that it's all a pack of lies and try and pick out the truth bits. Rather than the other way around. Because we have to understand that everybody who writes and reports and reads has their own agenda, just like you and I do. And we have to understand that, and that's part of their tactic. They understood the power of the media, and that's why they were so successful. William James, the philosopher, said, "There's nothing so absurd, but if you repeat it often enough, people will believe it." And the abortion rights movement actually understood this. When they wanted to normalize abortion in the Roe versus Wade case back in 1973, they basically sat around. Now, this guy, Bernard Nathanson, I don't know if you've seen the movie The Silent Scream, but he ran two of the biggest abortion providers. He was the kingpin of abortion in the States. And what happened was that ultrasound was developed where they could watch the scan of the child, and he watched a scan of an abortion. He never performed another abortion. Because you actually see on the video, and you can see him showing it there, you actually see the unborn child trying to swim away from the toll of destruction. But he says when they sat down to try and normalise and do what the gay community had done for their community, when they tried to do it for abortion, they used the same strategy. And they sat down and they came out with all these one-line statements. Women must have control over their own bodies. State A safe and legal abortion is every woman's right. I mean, these are hard to argue with. I mean, we can argue with them, but you know, when you say them to people who just aren't thinking through the issues and don't understand the unborn child aspect, who decides? You decide. Sounds pretty fair, doesn't it? Abortion is a personal decision between a woman and her doctor, never mind the choice of the unborn child. Freedom of choice, basic American right. And will women decide, or politicians, or bureaucrats in Washington or Wellington? And you can see, I mean, the abortion rights movement, they literally laughed as they came up with these phrases because they didn't actually believe them. He admits that they fed propaganda of backstreet abortions to try and make the situation sound worse. And we saw the same with the smacking debate as well. They fed incorrect data to make the situation sound worse. So we have to speak up, we have to challenge this. Look, just very briefly, there was a poll end of last year in the Sunday Star Times where they basically went to people and they said, which do you prefer? Do you prefer Christian policies or would you support a Christian party? When they asked about Christian policies, they actually found 33% support, 36% said, we'll take it or leave it, and 25% opposed it, okay, for Christian policies. So looking at prostitution, marriage, smacking, number of issues. They then said, okay, what about a Christian party? 15% supported, 19% were neutral, 64% said won't go near it. Now, you've got to ask yourself, what's going on there? Why is there this, I'm into Christian values, but, hey, buddy, don't put me anywhere near a Christian party. And I want to suggest to you that it's a communication aspect. It's understanding what the gay community and the pro-abortion community understood, that it's the way you communicate that is important. It's the verbal, it's using the media, it's understanding the issues. It's actually understanding what concerns family have and getting alongside them. The only bit that the Christian parties took a little bit of strength from was right out the side when they said support. They said, would you definitely support? And you'll see there that a Christian policies, 13% would definitely support a Christian party, 6%. And so the Christian parties jumped up and down and said, yes, we can get into Parliament. I think it might be a little bit harder than that. Let me just challenge you to finish with. Francis Schaeffer said this, when it comes to the issues of the day, the evangelical world most often has said nothing or has said nothing different from what the world would say. There's only one word for this, it's accommodation. The evangelical church has accommodated to the world spirit of the age. John Wesley spoke up about a number of issues, slavery, labour of children, rampant drunkenness, poor health of the peasant class, prison abuse, lack of education for the exploited poor. He spoke up about these issues. He didn't believe people when they said, look, don't talk about it because it'll just go away. He probably said, rubbish, you've got to talk about it. William Booth preached on the London streets, worked with the drunks, exploited lower class and prostitute. He lobbied for the raising the age of sexual consent for women to 16. In the days when there was no internet, he got a petition of 393,000 signatures, 2.5 miles long. And he said this, 50 years hence, it will matter very little indeed how these people treated us. It will matter a great deal how we did the work of God. It doesn't matter how people treat you. It matters whether you are doing the work of God. And of course, I hope you've seen the movie Amazing Grace. And if you haven't, you need to get it out on video. William Wilberforce won a seat in Parliament in 1780. There were 50,000 slaves. A quarter of them were dying just on the ship. And he introduced a slave trade bill in 1787. It probably didn't show the true number of years, but it wasn't passed for 20 years. For 20 years, he fought that issue. And in fact, 1 month after he died, slavery was abolished altogether. Now, you may be here tonight, and you may be saying, look, I came for a revival meeting. I want to get to know God more. And I want to just show you a little excerpt of that, out of that Amazing Grace video.
They put irons to the fire and do this to let you know that you no longer belong to God, but to a man.
Mr. Wilberforce, we understand you're having problems choosing whether to do the work of God or the work of a political activist.
We humbly suggest that you can do both.
That's my message tonight, folks. We must understand that we need to do both. We must have that relationship with God, but we must also do what he's calling us to do, which is to speak up. We need to speak up about these issues. Billy Graham said, our motto too often seems to be, stay aloof, don't get involved, let somebody else stick their neck out. In the face of all conditions, screaming to be rectified, too many of us find ourselves afflicted with moral laryngitis. It's a great term, isn't it? Moral laryngitis. See when he wrote that? 1962. Martin Luther King Jr. said, our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. And we had this one earlier on, Edmund Burke. All that is necessary for evil to succeed is for good men and women to do nothing. It's a silence that's been the problem. And finally, I better give you some scripture. Jesus said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." In the Beatitudes, there is one quality that is spoken about twice, only one quality, and that is righteousness. Jesus says, "You'll be filled." But then he says, later on, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." In other words, you will be filled, but you will be persecuted. Jesus is saying, toughen up, get a backbone, and do it. We have to do it. Amos, the prophet Amos, "Let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream." Proverbs, "The good influence of godly citizens causes a city to prosper." And Jesus said, "When the righteous thrive, the people rejoice. When the wicked rule, the people groan." I get a sense that people are groaning. If you talk to people, they are groaning. They don't know the answer. We know the answer. We have to communicate it, but we have to communicate it so that they understand it and get on board with it. Just finally, from Ephesians, Paul says this, "Take no part in the worthless deeds of evil and darkness. Instead, rebuke and expose them. It is shameful even to talk about the things that ungodly people do in the secret, but when the light shines on them, it becomes clear how evil these things are, and where your light shines, it will expose their evil deeds." Don't let people shut you up. Don't let people label you, because it's just an excuse not to debate you. Speak up. Do the work of God as you get closer to God. That's my message, and I encourage you, let's get on board, because it starts with us. We've got to stop pointing the finger, because I tell you what, if you point at somebody, guess what? There's three fingers pointing back at you. And that's got to be our response. Amen? Amen. Thank you.